Brandy Bailey? She was Barbara.
I guess we're all along here.
Any of y'all know Jamil?
Ledbetter? No, I didn't.
My next door neighbor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And her sister.
Same thing happened, right?
She worked at Carver, something similar happened to her when she was working at Carver.
Okay, we can go ahead.
It's October 12th, Jane.
God, I thought it was in the morning.
About 5:30.
That's the school, right?
It's joint session with the school board.
School board, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought that's what you were asking.
The plan that I haven't heard of.
No, I haven't even gotten anything on that one yet.
I think.
Is he reputable, credible?
Not much.
Are you complacent?
Are you complacent?
Do you know your right or left hand?
Salem City Council is now in session. Please stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming out. Before we get into the agenda items, I did want to publicly wish our colleague John Gibbons well. Hope he has a speedy recovery from his surgery last week. And we also have the council meeting minutes, work session minutes from the 13th, as well as the meeting minutes from the 13th. Are there any changes, comments on those? If not, please file those. And we have the Planning Commission minutes. Any questions about those? Of course, we have an item from that we could address later. And then we have the City Manager's Monthly Report for August. Any questions, comments on that? If not, please file that. All right, agenda item number one, special exception permit. Hold public hearing to consider the request of Salem Investment LC property owner and 110 East First Street LLC contract purchaser for the issuance of a special exception permit to allow general offices and medical offices clinics on the property located at 110 East First Street, tax map number 121-10-3. This was advertised in the September 8th and 15th editions of the Roanoke Times. The Planning Commission has recommended approval, and we have those minutes. Ms. Payne, do you have any comments for us?
Well, I guess given the fact that this is a request being submitted by City Attorney Steve Yost and Assistant City Attorney Bill Maxwell, I'll speak on their behalf and let you know that they're being evicted from the Roanoke College property and they're needing a new office. This office, as you said, is located at 110 East First Street, and they are requesting a special exception to allow their office to be located there. While they're going through the special exception for general office, they're also asking for a medical special exception as well, so that in the future, if they decide to vacate that building and a medical office wants to locate there, that would be possible.
Okay.
This was a change that was made during the last comp plan. It was originally zoned for this purpose, but when we went through the last change, a revision, we made some changes to the zoning. So now we're just putting it back to what it was originally.
This is a public hearing, so just anyone else want to speak? Mr. Yost?
The property is zoned multifamily, although there has been an office use there, as we understand it, since the building was built in 1957.
Salem Financial was there
for years, yes. And I think there was a doctor's office or dental office there at one point also. At any rate, we're not asking that it be rezoned. We're merely asking for the special exception. Although we're grandfathered to use it as an office, currently, of course, if the building happened to burn down or something like that, we would lose those grandfather rights. So we're asking for the special exception.
Okay. Anybody? Public?
Stella Reinhardt.
Your address, please, ma'am. Stella?
Huh?
Your address, please.
Broad Street, 213 North Broad Street. I forget the rules. I haven't done this in a while. I saw this on the announced agenda in the newspaper, and I just had a question about it. I went down to look at the property, and I'm in favor of this kind of a special exemption being made. I actually have two questions. The first question would be, when it was downzoned at the previous comprehensive plan, are we aware of why it was downzoned? Was there?
Well, I actually think that it was one of the situations where they were looking at the property and decided that it was a neighborhood kind of fit right there, and that change was made to kind of comply with that. Although we changed the use and made it non-conforming, and I guess we had, when you look at it, we had gone along with that at the time and did not realize it until recently when another person came forward to have another office put there, and that's when we were made aware that the change had been made.
So you're saying that in changing it, perhaps to encourage the health of the neighborhood in the future, at the last comprehensive plan, they actually made the building not be able to perform the way it was intended to be when it was built?
Well, that happened in a few places throughout the city, not intentionally. It was just one of those changes when we were looking at the comp plan that was actually made.
My view on it is that it seems to me that this would be a natural thing to do, to give it the less intensive special exemption under multifamily. But I did have another question, because as you know, recently on Union and Boulevard, when there was a request made originally, as I understand it, by one property owner in both cases to get a special exemption under multifamily, it seemed to me, from what I've heard and asked about, that the city actually asked them to then, in both cases, to go up to residential business and get the neighborhood, the nearby neighbors, to go to RB. And Boulevard's not so far away from First Street, and in both cases, I would say that First Street probably maybe has more ability to be seen, or at least as much ability to be seen as an RB district as Boulevard or Union would be. So my question for you is, I'm just trying to understand what the overall strategy is. Is there one? I mean, have you seen the difference between, I prefer myself to go with a special exemption on one property rather than switch over to five to RB. Was there a difference in strategy here?
I'll speak. I don't think there was a strategy. There's no conspiracy to do anything.
I think
we're
conspiracy.
Using the property as we think it is best fit to be used.
I just want to clarify. I did not use the word conspiracy.
I apologize. All right, but there's no strategy to do anything differently. I think it's just that the property owners in these different cases have asked to use the property for certain reasons that need other zoning for those uses, and we've looked at it and deemed it appropriate. But I will also point out we're not addressing Boulevard tonight. We're looking at the First Street property only.
I understand that, but I guess in making the decision about this, I just wanted to figure out why, in both of those other cases, when the original request was made for only a multifamily exception, which I would have been fine with, and I think the people that lived in those neighborhoods might have been fine with. That the push was made for a whole block of RB, but in this case, we're going with a single property, and we're going along with the idea of just the special exception in multifamily, which I approve of. I don't understand why there's a difference.
Mr. Boggs, you can correct me, but I don't, their business, if you're referring to the Boulevard property, they could not have conducted that business in a multifamily house. They did not request multifamily housing. It's not permitted in that, in multifamily housing, their use, that they're intending to use it for.
I was thinking at the meeting that it was understood, there was a question made that they could have done it in multifamily with a special exemption, just as this could have happened. Am I incorrect?
General office can be done in multifamily by a special exception, that's correct. But the request by the property owner was for residential business in the one lot. And when we looked at, if you look at Union Street or Boulevard, those two streets, I think, appear very differently than does First Street, in that First Street has two commercial properties already zoned in an appropriate use that doesn't require rezoning. It only requires a special exception. And there are the adjoining properties to those two properties are residential, as are the properties as you go down several houses. There are some businesses further down on Colorado Street. But when you look at Boulevard and Union, the uses and the areas that were considered for residential business rezoning already had some component of a business in them. And in addition to a request to rezone and an opportunity to correct some problems on both Union and on Boulevard where we had non-conforming uses. We don't have a non-conforming use problem where we're talking about on First Street adjacent to the properties where the special exception is being requested. So I think there is a significant difference between the situation that occurred on Union and on Boulevard than what you see currently where the request for the special exception is being asked for on First and Colorado. And certainly would be happy to sit down and discuss those with you at any time if that's not an adequate answer.
I appreciate your answer. But I did want to clarify one thing that you said early on. I was under the impression that the request made on Union and Boulevard was originally made for multifamily special exemption. It was not originally made for residential business.
That may well be correct. I really don't recall that.
Does anyone else recall that?
No, they wouldn't. They don't come to council for the original. They come to staff for the application.
At one of the meetings I was at, I thought I heard Mr. Padgett say that originally his had been turned back, and he didn't realize it had been turned back into actually residential single family in the last comprehensive plan review, was my understanding at the time, and originally had gone for multifamily with a special exemption.
Even if that was the case, staff's opinion was that residential business was a better fit in both of those because of the adjoining uses on the properties adjacent to where the request for the rezoning was being made.
I thank you for your response, but I do just want to give one more of my own. I've gone to all three of these places and looked at them, trying to see them through your eyes. And Union is definitely a residential street, even though it has some business on that side that you're talking about. And Boulevard is definitely, at this point, and has been for decades, a residential street. And on that block where you changed it, the Sprinkles business is the only one that looks business, right in the middle of a residential boulevard. So I guess I'm just asking you to maybe think about revisiting or making it clear to us residents what, if there is a strategy, what it is, so we can understand why you're doing this and when it's going to happen, so we don't worry that there's going to be a huge swath of business right down our residential neighborhoods, right down the middle of Salem. We understand there's sometimes stress from businesses coming in, and I'm not against turning this into a special exemption. I think it's a good choice. But I think there's a weird correlation, and I would appreciate further talk about it, but I also would appreciate the conversation verbally here, as well as sort of in the office. You know what I'm saying? So there's a public conversation about if there's really a change in how we're doing this, because frankly, when a request is made for a multifamily special exemption, one property, and it turns into five properties that are turned to RB, That's a huge change, and it happened twice, and then in this case, it didn't happen. I appreciate it not happening in this case, but I'd just like us to maybe think about revisiting or having a public conversation about why it's happening when it happens. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
If not,
it's your pleasure. Comments?
I see no reason not to move in passage to the special, you know, special permit, exemption permit.
I'll second that. I agree. It's a good use of the property.
We have a motion and a second. Please call the roll.
Mrs. Garst?
Aye.
Mr. Jones?
Aye.
Ms. Johnson?
Aye.
Mr. Foley?
Aye. Motion carries. Item number two, public improvement bonds. I have your notes here. Sorry. Where are they? Here we go. Hold public hearing, consider adoption of resolution 1170 ratifying the issuance of $4.5 million of public improvement bonds. This was advertised in the September 11th and 18th editions of the Roanoke Times. And we're dealing with this issue again, Mr. Turk, because it was not.
Because there was a problem with the advertising. The advertising was required to be two consecutive weeks in a row, and we just didn't have. So we re-advertised, and we're now correcting that mistake. And resolution 1170 reaffirms what was done by council at an earlier date. And had been properly done.
No. This is a public hearing. Does anyone like to speak to this matter? Stratt?
Mr. Mayor, Council, staff, I'm Wayne Adkins. I live at 1505 Ashley Drive. I'm not here to speak against the improvement bonds. I understand now what it's all about. It was not clear in the newspaper exactly what was going to happen. Mr. Turk shared with me what is happening with the money and how the money is to be spent and where it's to be spent and for what use. My concern was that if there was a significant bond referendum here and we were looking at huge dollars that could be used in schools, I see that as a priority rather than the Civic Center. I do have one question. I want to make sure that, the money that we're spending is not being spent inappropriately or untimely, because of, I know that the Civic Center is on the priority list for major renovation at some point in time. I just would like to be sure that the work that is going to be done will not be not used in, the future, and we won't have a redundant cost coming later on down the road for, that improvement.
I can speak on that behalf, Dwayne, is that, again, thank you for being here tonight. Stella, thanks for being here, too, and make a motion while you're up here. The monies that are being invested right now are for the HVAC that have, for the most part, the original systems in there back in the 60s. And there's been a lot of going back and forth, and this improvement through the Siemens company has been gone back and forth, and it's gone done in a lot of localities, that you get your savings. The savings you make by the improvement of those systems, especially how we're going to pay for it. And I think that a lot of effort, and it hadn't been without disagreements, okay? But they, you know, it's for update that part because of the events that we have. If we lose the heating addition in some of these events, we're on a shoestring right now. And I think that Frank and Carrie and Jay and Mike Tyler, I think, have been involved. Kevin, it surely has been involved. They've done their homework, and we think this is the best way to go. The other localities have done the same thing, and it's working very good. We heard no negative based on the savings from other localities through the Siemens. Okay.
There you go. Thank you for the clarification.
Just add one thing.
Mr.
This is a discussion.
Mr. Turk, could you pull the mic to you, please?
Okay. Item two that we're talking about really is the $4.5 million
water
that sewer bond issue that we were doing under the consent order. Resources bond. The item that Mr. Adkins and I talked about is the item on the Civic Center, which we will reauthorizing the issuance of the $4.5 million of bonds with the Virginia Resources Authority through the Department of Environmental Quality to upgrade sewer lines in the city.
So it's different.
Yeah, I was explaining to you what the Civic Center part was, and you asked the thing about the Civic Center.
Right.
The water and sewer.
And I thought the public bonds were for the Civic Center, so that's.
These are for the sewer system.
Okay. I have no problem with sewer system.
Water and sewer.
Water and sewer, I have no problem with that. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Wayne.
Before we go further, we have an AV problem here.
There we go.
Frank?
What'd you do?
All right. Anyone else on item number two? $4.5 million bonds for sewer. If not, what's your pleasure?
Well, knowing that it's been properly advertised and that we all agree water and sewer are important, I'll move passage of Resolution 1170.
I'll second Ms. Garst's motion.
We have a motion and a second. Please call the roll.
Mrs. Garst?
Aye.
Mr. Jones?
Aye.
Ms. Johnson?
Aye.
Mr. Foley?
Aye. Before we go on, I would like to just say this is one reason I personally would like to see that public notices be allowed via the web or internet instead of being published. This is the second time in the past year that I can remember that we've missed something, and I know that was before the General Assembly, so I just want to throw in my 2 cents worth there that they allow that at some point. Item number four.
Three, excuse me.
I'm looking at the right one, wrong number. Fire department equipment. Consider awarding contract for the purchase of a new ambulance.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Jones.
The Audit Finance Committee this morning met, and the committee reviewing the accepted bids for the EMS ambulance for the fire department is not ready to make a recommendation to the Audit Finance Committee at this time. Therefore, we recommend that this item be continued until the October 11th meeting.
Okay. We have, we have a motion on that, right?
That's as a motion.
Motion.
Right?
Anyone else?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to continue item number three. Please call the roll.
Mrs. Garst?
Aye.
Mr. Jones?
Aye.
Ms. Johnson?
Aye.
Mr. Foley?
Aye. Item number four, Salem Civic Center. Mr. Jones.
Mr. Mayor, the again, the Audit Finance Committee met this morning, and the city has been looking to improve the heating, air conditioning, lighting at the Salem Civic Center for some time. Some of the current systems have been in place since the center was opened in 1967. Over the years, the energy efficiency of this equipment has deteriorated significantly, and reliability has become suspect. With this in mind, the city is into a procurement process developed by the Commonwealth of Virginia. The city selects Siemens Building Technologies to be its partner in this project. Studies of this building, its energy use, age of the equipment has been reviewed. The project was discussed as part of an upcoming bond issue totaling $6.5 million. Numerous meetings have been held between Siemens staff and the city staff to hammer out a contract that is acceptable to the city. An agreement is imminent. However, at this time, is becoming an issue regarding the cost of the project, the completion of the work when facilities are available. The committee recommends approval of the contract with Siemens Building Technologies in the amount of $4,222,339. This contract will be subject to final review and approval by city staff along with the contractual agreement or approval of the city attorney and proper city officials to be authorized to execute this contract.
Mr. Boggs, would you like to address this item?
I'd simply add a couple of things. We are, because of the nature of the operation of the Civic Center, there are certain windows of time where we would have blocks, and it generally occurs in the wintertime, and January is the month where we want to try and get this work in, which is why we're asking Council today to go ahead and authorize us to have the ability to execute this upon final approval so that we can get the equipment ordered through Siemens. And Mr. McDermott is here this evening from Siemens. But there is, as I understand it, there's on a couple of pieces, there's a 10-week lead time and some other things. So that's why we would like to go ahead and have Council approve this tonight, even though the final form of the contract is not complete. We are, I think, within probably a few sentences of agreeing on a final form of the document. So we're asking for that tonight, for your approval to allow the city to execute that contract. We have, and Siemens, as I mentioned earlier, has been very patient with us as we've worked through this. This is our first project where we're using this type of procurement, and it has been a learning process for myself, for Mr. Talaferro, for Mr. Turk, as we've gone through this process. And we've also gone through, as Mr. Jones said earlier, a number of iterations of this project. And we started off with a project that was going to put rooftop units in and solve our immediate air conditioning and heating problems. But that would have been relatively a short-term project. In other words, that equipment would have lasted 15 years and probably needed to be replaced at some point. We have revised that project with the help of Siemens, Jay Talaferro, and a lot of the city staff to a project which we believe, while it may cost a little bit more money, will have a significantly better payback in terms of the life expectancy of the equipment that we would be installing there. And to address Mr. Adkins' question a little bit further, we also, well, there was some discussion several years ago about a very large rehabilitation of the Civic Center project in the neighborhood of probably $20 million. This $4.5 million project really is going to do what needs to be done there, and I think pull this off of the frontline emergency in terms of priority list for the city, allowing schools and some other projects to take the lead. So this really is not a project that we're going to do and then in 5 or 10 years come back and pull it all out and do something different. I never say never, but I think this is equipment that will be in here for 30 years and will be used regardless of what happens with the Civic Center. We're certainly in a position today or in the next 5 years to be looking at any major additions, rehab, changes to the Civic Center. This is really it for the future, for any time in the near future, and certainly there are a couple of school projects that I think council, I don't mean to speak for them, but I think staff and council see as our next priority once we get the Civic Center heating and air conditioning into a much more efficient and reliable system than what we have today.
Mr. McDermott. Would you please, do they make them as well as they used to? The current system's been there 43 years. Are we going to be able to get another?
We did. Actually, what we're building is really a sustained infrastructure, and it's kept up in the future that it's long into the future, and that's the reverse of what we're doing. So we're going to look at anything that they're going to last. This is quite a while. And they actually make equipment much more sustainable than they did in the past. So we're very pleased with the negotiation. I'm not going to tell you.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions?
I had a question. At one point, we were going back and forth about whether there would be a performance type of contract. Or
right. And what we have, this is a performance type of contract, the type of procurement we're using. And Frank may be able to answer this a little bit better than I can. There is, in fact, a calculation that shows the energy savings as part of the payback to make this project affordable. I think we have the option to have that guarantee written into the contract if we're willing to write it in there. And along with that comes some expense to us in order to go through the verification process to prove that that savings is there. Where we are right now with that is that the cost to do the measurement and verification would be around $10,000, $7,000 to $10,000 a year, just to prove that we saved money. And while after going through this very long process with Siemens and going through a lot of engineering study on this, we feel very confident that the return on investment that they've shown us in terms of the back of the envelope study to justify this expense is going to be there, and that we can measure that sort of on our own through our actual consumption of therms of energy or electric watts, that we really don't need to go through that verification. And by giving up the verification process, we're giving up the guarantee, but we feel very comfortable that Siemens does a very good job of making sure they deliver what they promise. And everybody we spoke to who went through the measurement and verification really got what they expected and more. So we thought, rather than spend that money every year, we'd rather just save that money, verify on our own, and make sure the equipment is operating properly. But the return is still going to be there. It's just not going to be written into the contract that they have to come back in at our expense and measure it and verify it.
So I guess there's like an energy audit instead of any type of metering in place. Is that the way it'll go? Okay.
Well, we'll do our own verification based on our actual consumption, and because, you know, we read the electric meters and we know the water and every other utility that's going in there, we feel like we're going to be able to measure that, and we will certainly do that. I mean, I think we have an interest in knowing how much we're saving to put towards the debt service to pay for this, and that's what Frank will do.
We feel that over time the amount spent in the different utility accounts go down, and certainly will not go up even over the long term. But I'll be much more efficient, and those savings will help go toward the debt service without having to pay to have somebody tell us that we had the savings.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? What kind of warranty is with this system and labor? What kind of warranty is provided, Mr. McDermott? Can you please come forward, sir?
Sure.
Sorry, I'm making you work a little bit.
A standard warranty is 1 year for labor and installation, but we also, when we purchase equipment, we always purchase the extended warranty for the equipment that we buy, and that warranty transfers to the Civic Center itself. And so typically, they're usually about 5 years is what's in the marketplace today. So in our scope that we do, we always buy that extended warranty because it's a very good insurance policy. So that'll carry a transfer right over to you all. But we guarantee our work for a year. That's labor, parts, material. No question about that.
What about the capacity you're installing? Is it the same or greater, or how's it compared to the amount that's there now? Can you compare it?
Well, without getting into a lot of the specifics in detail, over the years that the equipment efficiency has gone down dramatically due to some factors of trying to add capacity into the system. So we're going to clean that up, add more capacity into the system, and the facility will actually work as it was originally designed to work. In other words, when you have truck run events and those kind of things, the fumes will go out, the smoke will go out, and those type of things. But over the years, the guys have done a really good job holding it together. But the new design of it is going to have a little bit more efficiency, a little bit more air into the system, and being able to take care of all of the fumes and the different events that happen there.
Thank you.
Okay.
I have a question for you, Sios. We're asking for approval for staff to negotiate. If we were to pass that tonight and then hypothetically something were to happen and we decided to renege or whatever the case may be, where does that place us or put us legally? Because this isn't the final approval, right?
Yeah, you have the right to change your mind until the contract is signed.
Okay.
I would anticipate the contract will be signed very shortly because I think we're very close in getting the final draft. But until it's signed, you can always change your mind.
Okay. Just wanted to.
Okay.
With council's pleasure.
It's a form of a motion.
Oh, okay. We have a motion.
I'll
second. A motion and second for item number 4. Please call the roll.
Mrs. Garst.
Aye.
Mr. Jones?
Aye.
Ms. Johnson?
Aye.
Mr. Foley?
Aye. Motion passes. Item number 5, City Code Amendment. Consider ordinance on second reading amending Part 2, Chapter 22, Sections 22-46.1 and 22-52 of the Code of the City of Salem, Virginia, pertaining to license due dates and penalties. This passed on the first reading on September 13th.
I'll move passage.
I'll second.
Motion second. Please call the roll.
Mrs. Garst?
Aye.
Mr. Jones?
Aye.
Ms. Johnson?
Aye.
Mr. Foley?
Aye. And then closed session. Mrs. Garst, you want to take that tonight for Mr. Givens?
I will. Okay, let me get my little numbers lined up here. I move that in accordance with Section 2.2-3711A.7 of the Code of Virginia, 1950 as amended to date, council convened to close session for the purpose of discussing the following specific matters. for consultation by legal counsel regarding a specific legal matter requiring the provision of legal advice by such counsel. Second.
The motion is second. Please call the roll.
Mrs. Garst.
Aye.
Mr. Jones.
Aye.
Ms. Johnson.
Aye.
Mr. Foley.
Aye.
Not always. If there are items, then they do meet, but if not, they cancel it. So they cancel it. It's just what's on there. It's usually straightforward. They don't go over short and sweet. I mean, if you ever have any questions, I
sure.
Thank you. You're welcome. Have a good night. Try to keep dry. Yeah.
My letter from the Postmaster General. I still can't believe he took the time to write this.
Dear Barney,
I sincerely apologize about losing all the invitations you sent out to your 8th birthday party. That's why none of your classmates showed up. Not because you threw up when they turned the lights off at the planetarium. No one even noticed that. Also, Janie Masterson's mother is a whore. With gin on her breath at 10 in the morning, she's got some nerve kicking us out of the carpool. Love, Postmaster General.
Bang.
Does your mom make stuff like that up a lot?
Constantly. I mean, she put more effort into some lies than others.
Mom, who's my dad? All the other kids at school know who their dad is. Who's mine?
I don't know. That guy.
Did she tell you that Bob Barker was your dad, too?
No. I heard Flip Wilson, Bill Cosby, James Earl Jones, Meadowlark Lemon. The list goes on. I still can't get a straight answer about who my real dad is. And Barney's no help. He still believes every lie that my mom told us growing up. Not me. I caught on early. Careful! Michael Jackson sent me this glove for my 10th